But turn back to Genesis with me. I want to show you the next step. That's Genesis 4, where we get religion starting, offering God your own way. But look at Genesis 11. Because paganism really takes form in chapter 11 of Genesis. And that's why Genesis is so important. It's so foundational to everything we believe. If religion started with Cain, then organized religion starts in chapter 11. And Satan's church officially began at the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11, the first nine verses. And these nine verses are so important. Because this shows organized religion. And what they do is, verse 3, they say to one another, let us make bricks, let's bake them. And they had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, come, verse 4, let us build for ourselves a city, a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. And look at verse 5. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, these people are one, and they all have one language, and this is what they begin to do, and nothing that they purpose to do will be withheld from them. Here's a Trinitarian verse. Come, let us. Remember, come, let us make man in our image, the plural of God, the three persons. Within the Trinity, one essence, three persons. Let us go down and there confuse their language that they may not understand one another's speech, so the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the earth. By the way, computers now, by language studies, they've taken computers and studied, and this was recently on MSNBC, they've taken all the known languages of the world and compared them and kept distilling them down, looking for language families, and they have found out that all of the languages of the world seem to come and break down to one common ancestral language family, and it all goes back to this area that we would call the Plains of Shinar. And so mathematically and linguistically, they've traced back, and it's interesting, they also have traced back all the women back to one Eve and all the men back to one Adam. Of course, they don't believe what God says, but they have done this genetically and linguistically. And so we see that everyone spoke one language at one time, and there, at a point of time after the flood, recently, God, in the area of Iran and Iraq, somewhere near probably where the original Garden of Eden was, God made everybody start speaking different languages, and that scattered people into language groups, and they began to move out, and then they began to develop their own customs, and that's where we have all the nations of the world coming from, right from the Tower of Babel. Well, this was about maybe 4,500 years ago, something like that, organized religion. And here on the fertile plain of Shinar, probably very close to the original Garden of Eden, the first spade of dirt was turned for the purpose of devil worship. They were building this tower because they were going to make their way up to heaven themselves. And they were going to build a tower to reach up into the heavens. And God says, there's nothing impossible for them, and I'm going to confound them. That's why the divisions that have been historically in Christianity have always been for good. I'm talking about the doctrinal divisions that have made for denominations have kept us pure. The Roman Catholic Church has always said they would be united and never divided, and they have gotten progressively worse doctrinally. But the Protestant denominations have always been dividing over modes of baptism, modes of church government, and this and that. And through the parts, there's been purity preserved. Because every time you get everything united too much, you have someone rising up to the top who pollutes the whole thing. And so that's why God divided them, and that made for the world to be able to be reached with the gospel, as we'll see, through the Jews. Okay, the first full-time minister of Satan. Look back at chapter 10 of Genesis, verse 8, because there's an interesting critter here, and this is where paganism comes from. In verse 8 of chapter 10 of Genesis, it says, Cush, that's one of the sons of Ham, that's one of the sons of Noah, Cush, in verse 8, begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one on the earth, and he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord, and the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and Erech, Akkad, Calna, and Shinar. By the way, the Akkadian civilization is one of the oldest known civilizations on the planet. Did you know that? You go to museums, the Akkadian, this is the first, this right here in Genesis, this is the first civilization after the flood. That means something that you can find, because the flood destroyed all the vestiges of civilization, basically. And so this guy, by the name of Nimrod, started the Babylonian kingdom, the Akkadian kingdom, and the predecessors to all the world kingdoms. So, what happened to this guy? Well, secular history tells us that Nimrod, Noah's wicked and apostate grandson, became a minister of Satan. You say, how did he do that? Well, if you look in secular history and read the traditions of the different nations, it says Nimrod married a woman who was evil and as demonic as himself, and her name was Semiramis. And you know what's interesting about her? Let me read to you from a history book. His wife, Semiramis, knew of God's promise of a future Savior, Genesis 3:15, this future deliverer that would come, and so she brazenly claimed her son Tammuz, her firstborn, fulfilled this prophecy. She said, I have the Savior of the world. Now let me read to you a book called Two Babylons. It's by a man, Alexander Hislop, the great 19th century historian, traces the concept of false religion under the idea of Babylonianism. And from various ancient sources, he concludes Nimrod's wife, Semiramis the First, apparently was the high priestess of the religion of Babel and the founder of all succeeding mystery religions. After the tower was destroyed, which we read about in chapter 11 when God confounded them, and the multiplicity of languages was developed, she was worshipped as a goddess under many different names. See, what happens is the Tower of Babel, Nimrod's wife, Semiramis, had this united worship. She said, I am the priestess, my son Tammuz is the Messiah who was promised, and worship me. And these people had this belief at Babel, and then when God reached down and confounded them, and they took all their languages and went off to different places, the worship of this mother and her son went with them. Now, how did it go? Well, this woman, Semiramis, was called Ishtar when the people went off to Syria. She was called Astarte with the people that went to Phoenicia. She was called Isis by the people that went to Egypt. She was called Aphrodite by the people that went to Greece. She was called Venus by the people that went to Rome. In each case, she was the deity of immoral love and fertility. And in every civilization, her son Tammuz was deified under various names. You say, is that documented anywhere? Yes. You know of all places where? One of the greatest museums in the world today is in the city of Rome, and it's in the Vatican. It's called the Vatican Museum. And if you ever get to go there and can have longer than an hour there, you go up the main set of stairs, the one that everybody has to walk by. They have all these colored tapes on the floor, and the one tape says 8 hours, and all the other tapes take 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour, 4 hours. If you go on the 8 hour tape, that's a little blue strip on the floor, and follow it, the very first room you go into is a room that portrays all of the mother-son religions of the world. And they actually have statues of Tammuz on the lap of Semiramis. And then they have Isis with her son Horus on her lap. And they have Ishtar, and they go through all the religions of the world. Ashtaroth with Baal on her lap. Mother, son, like that, all the way through in the Vatican. They actually are the best repository of the history of this whole cult. And it's amazing they have that inside of purportedly the largest Christian church in the world. But according to the cult of Ishtar, Tammuz was conceived by a sunbeam. What's that? It's a counterfeit of the virgin birth, right? She was, according to Semiramis, she said, my son, Nimrod, had nothing to do with him. A sunbeam came down and hit me, and I conceived supernaturally a child, and he was born by the name of Tammuz. Now you say, that's crazy. You know anything about the most recent Star Wars? Where did, I don't even know his name, the little kid that's got too much stuff in his blood, where did he come from? She says, I had no man. He just happened. What's that? That's called a virgin birth. This has always been a part of human religion, counterfeiting the promise of God that a child would be born with only a woman and no man involved. And every religion has this virgin birth deal. And this was the origination of that, with this sunbeam causing a virgin to conceive a child. And the virgin supposedly was Semiramis, Nimrod's wife, and the son was Tammuz. And Tammuz, this son, corresponds to Baal in Phoenicia. Does that ring a bell? Baal? That's what's worshipped in Israel, and we'll see that in the Old Testament. Osiris in Egypt, Eros in Greece, Cupid in Rome. That's why it's not funny. Valentine's Day is not funny. All of these holidays, Halloween just passed, Valentine's Day coming up, all of those have pagan overtones. And we should be very careful with our involvement in things that have anything to do historically with paganism. It has to do with, in every case, the worship of those gods and goddesses are associated with sexual immorality. Even, and we'll see, the celebration of Lent is a development of Semiramis' mourning 40 days over the death of her son Tammuz. Now here we go again. They get all mixed up. Because Jesus went out in the wilderness for how long and was tempted by the devil? 40 days. But in the paganism, this virgin-born son Tammuz from Semiramis' moonbeam or sunbeam, he gets killed by a wild boar, and his body's all cut up and thrown around, and she collects all the pieces and buries it, and after 40 days he comes back to life. And so the worship of him coming back to life is after the 40 days, and the 40 days were her period of mourning. So what does the Catholic Church do with that? They picked it up as the 40 days of Lent, of kind of, remember Ash Wednesday, how you start it? By the way, what's the day before Ash Wednesday? Mardi Gras. What does Mardi Gras mean? Mardi means Tuesday, and Gras means fat. Fat Tuesday, which means you live like the devil and eat everything you can, is the day before Ash Wednesday, which is the beginning of Lent, which is 40 days of mourning before the resurrection of Christ. Where did that come from? It's not in the Bible. It comes right from this cult of Ishtar and Tammuz.